You are listening to a summary of On Grand Strategy, a book by John Lewis Gaddis.
Yale professor and Pulitzer winner John Lewis Gaddis sees his book's title as referring to more than planning and fighting wars. It means connecting the dots and understanding the big picture while seeing details. He loads the text with illustrative, often playful, historical and cultural examples with leaders who are both great and flawed. How well the book resonates with readers may vary. To some, it offers an inclusive theory of the world, with delightfully diverse examples. Others may feel that Gaddis's focus on history and analogies blurs his overarching concepts. However, if you're interested in clarifying different approaches to strategy, you've come to the right place.
Grand Strategy describes how to plan and fight wars. It represents the connection between the ends and means of aligning capabilities and aspirations. Traditionally, grand strategy describes how to plan and fight wars. It represents the connection between ends and means, and aligns capabilities and aspirations. The first recorded relationships of this kind were military. Though such connections go back as far as the first human who identified how to get what he wanted by any means available. Strategy happens when you connect the dots that make up your situation. The grand refers to how much is at stake. Think back to your decisions as a student. Sleeping an extra few minutes and rushing to class might not seem to have had a significant impact on you. But if you consider all the implications, the stakes increase, what you learn in the course, how it relates to your broader studies, the degree you earn, and the profession you choose all contribute to the grand scope of your strategy. This alignment of ends and means is as necessary for states as it is for people. Net assessment is the contemporary term for sketching out a strategy. To the Renaissance political thinker Machiavelli, sketching was a way of conveying complexity usably. More than just a list, a sketch conjures environmental elements that are likely to determine outcomes. When you sketch a situation properly, it includes knowns, climate, geography, your capabilities and objectives, probabilities, your adversary's goals, your ally's reliability and cultural constraints, and the unknowns lurking in between. To balance these elements, take a triangular view across time, space, and scale. Since all the parts mesh, any impact on one of them modifies the final outcomes of all three. Describing people as detail-oriented foxes or broader-thinking hedgehogs reveals their approaches to strategy. Isaiah Berlin, a Russian emigre and Oxford don, wrote an essay about Tolstoy's philosophy of history in 1939. He tapped into a line of ancient Greek poetry by Archilochus of Paros, who presented an analogy that informed Berlin's work and a lot of the subsequent dialogue about the nature of grand strategy. Archilochus compared a fox, which knows many things, to a hedgehog, which knows one big thing. Foxes evaluate detailed, varied ends. Hedgehogs see everything through a central vision. Applying this to Tolstoy, Berlin explored both viewpoints. Foxes evaluate different outcomes, even if those that are contradictory, unrelated or loosely connected. Hedgehogs have an overall view that infuses what they do and say with significance. Philip E. Tetlock, a political psychologist, set out to evaluate the accuracy or inaccuracy of people's political judgments. He used the fox and hedgehog framework to look at 27,451 predictions about world politics by 284 experts. In 2005, Tetlock wrote that status, professional history, political leanings and degree of optimism or pessimism didn't make much difference in people's predictions. The key variable in Tetlock's theory of good judgment was how each expert thinks. Self-identified foxes predicted more accurately than hedgehogs. Foxes stitch together information from a variety of sources. Being self-deprecating, they're willing to evaluate any thought critically. Hedgehogs went into large explanations and avoided self-deprecation and criticism. Their preconceptions trapped them. Foxes evaluated contradictions, recalled mistakes without being overly prone to rationalize them, and were willing to be self-critical. They did the best job of evaluating the realistic outcomes of events, and so they gained the strategic upper hand. However, such an outcome isn't cut and dried. If you try to anticipate and evaluate all the details, as a fox might, you could risk not achieving anything. But if you plow ahead, focusing on the big picture without preparing for its many eventualities as a hedgehog would, certainly some things will fail. Sun Tzu illustrated this in The Art of War when he taught that although you can't anticipate all that may happen, being aware of a range of possibilities is better than not having any sense of what to expect. As he wrote, in battle there are only the normal and extraordinary forces, but their combinations are limitless, none can comprehend them all. Humans may have survived by balancing the habits of foxes, who adapt to rapid change, and hedgehogs, who thrive with stability. Examples of fox-like and hedgehog-like approaches to planning exist throughout history, and illustrate the balance necessary to execute grand strategy. Whereas Napoleon, a hedgehog, forfeited his empire by conflating aspirations and capabilities, Abraham Lincoln, a fox, helped save the United States by understanding his limits. Grand strategy needs to balance positive and negative liberties. Berlin too identified polarized types of liberty, which need to find balance in a grand strategy. 1. Positive liberty, you gain freedom from having to make decisions by giving them to a larger authority, which could be a theory, ideology, party or collective. In its extreme form, this can lead to tyranny by silencing contradictory voices. When hedgehogs try to wrangle foxes, positive liberty is in play. It's represented historically by those who believed so firmly that they knew how the world functioned that they bulldozed ahead, the older Pericles, Julius Caesar, Augustine, Philip II, George II, Napoleon, Wilson and the totalitarians of the 20th century. 2. Negative liberty, this represents being free enough to make decisions. It cultivates contradictions. Without clear guidance, it can lead to parochialism, drift and anarchy. Foxes who represent negative liberty include the younger Pericles, Octavian Caesar, Machiavelli, Elizabeth I, the American founders, Lincoln, Salisbury and especially Franklin D. Roosevelt. Each demonstrated humility about what was ahead, adjusted to those changes with flexibility, and accepted or leveraged inconsistencies. King Xerxes' evaluations about whether to cross the Hellespont in 480 BC offer points of comparison for many subsequent strategic decisions. In 480 BC, on the banks of the Hellespont Strait, Xerxes, Persia's king of kings, looked across the water and saw Greek troops assembled on the other side. He and his advisor, his uncle Artabanus, considered invading Greece for the second time in little more than a decade. Xerxes, a hedgehog, he gave orders, gathered forces, and was ready to move forward with sending troops across the bridges and to endure the terrors ahead. Artabanus, a fox, couldn't mute his concerns about formidable enemies, hunger. Bound to hit the troops on the long traverse around the Aegean Sea, and the risks of soldiers dropping from exhaustion before their first battle. The ambitious Xerxes redoubled his efforts and decided to conquer not only Greece, but Europe in full. He sent Artabanus back to rule the Persian Empire in its current form. Examining the mental hellespont that influenced decision-making illustrates grand strategy. Leadership is on one side, while common sense is on the other. Frequent, free crossings between the two sides make it possible to align the means and the ends. Moving forward requires simultaneously keeping opposing concepts in mind while remaining functional. Hopefully, brilliantly. Training is a critical component of grand strategy. Training can protect common sense, which is fundamental to grand strategy. Teaching guards against strategies becoming less intelligent as they grow in scope and scale. Once an event begins, you're on your own, but you can benefit from coaching that helps you build stamina, enforce discipline, encourage collaboration, show failure and then show how to recover from it. Self-consciousness grows and flexibility diminishes as a person acquires authority. This tension informs how leaders think when they need to balance expertise and common sense, or logic and leadership, in order to align their means and their ends. The resulting conclusions provide critical information, though they may lack details. To nurture strategic thinking, Learn also from the relationships between general versus specific information or between universal and localized knowledge. Grand strategist Karl von Clausewitz, author of the classic On War, called history a sequence of stories. Together, these stories distill into theory, so you can learn from them without having to hear the stories repeatedly. Beginners benefit from relying on theory, but relying on theory too much can blind you to common sense or justify your mistakes. As your rank rises, so does your risk of getting hung up in jargon, metaphors, and technicalities. Political history from around the world informs the understanding of grand strategy. Athens, the model for all subsequent democracies, failed because its leaders didn't ask sufficient questions about the reasons behind the wars it fought. The individual who was most responsible for the Peloponnesian War was Pericles. The war became an unintentional outcome of his efforts to build a culture to support a strategy. Pericles' strategy turned out to be flawed and backward. After the war broke out, he still defined Athenian culture as one that aimed to prevent war. As European powers expanded into the Americas, monarchs took distinctly different approaches to staking their claims. King Philip II of Spain micromanaged his country's colonial exploits. Spain conquered Mexico and Peru, capturing a steady stream of silver and gold. Spain created administrative and architectural uniformity across its possessions. England's Queen Elizabeth I wanted her empire's enterprises to be self-sufficient. She never rushed into transatlantic politics. She made the most of her navy, which was far smaller than the Spanish Armada, by letting the Spaniards risk their ships while she held back and protected hers. America's founders grappled with numerous, complicated problems that required grand strategy. As Benjamin Franklin noted in 1751, the colony's populations doubled every 25 years. Westward expansion was necessary, but difficult, since French and Native American forces blocked settlers' movement. American revolutionaries, familiar with classical texts, heeded lessons from the failure of Greece's democracy and Rome's republic. Various American leaders' ideas about continental expansion illustrate their different strategic ideologies and strategies. President James Madison became instrumental in helping the republic make the transition to being an empire without turning government into tyranny. Because the United States stretched across a third of the continent, the distance between territories prevented the Union from fully functioning, leaving some Americans vulnerable to injustice and instability. Madison used scale for good by increasing the number of people who benefited from being voters. That act reached through history to strengthen the republic, allowing it to move forward. President John Quincy Adams, a hedgehog, requested federal financing of roads, a robust navy, more global commerce, and a national university, only to realize after a year in office that he had little support. Lincoln, ever the fox, knew instinctively that war needed to serve, not consume the states involved. Focusing the critical eye of someone with accumulated experience, Lincoln evaluated costs without ignoring them or fearing them to the point of paralysis. Lacking the training of the West Point brass serving him, Lincoln outdid them in devising the strategy for the Civil War. During World War I, President Woodrow Wilson built the U.S. Army while portraying avoidance of war as preparedness for it. However, negotiating peace required diplomatic skills, not managerial ones, and Wilson was ill-prepared. When he presented his 14 points to Congress in 1918, he didn't draw clear lines between those points and history, culture, or precedent. Franklin D. Roosevelt surpassed expectations. He lamented experts' limited horizons. He tuned his own antenna delicately, picking up on perpetual changes in events, activities, and feelings. Roosevelt's approach to politics in the 1940s rescued American capitalism and democracy sufficiently that the setbacks they'd suffered in the first half of the 20th century could reverse themselves in the second. If Roosevelt's grand strategy wasn't successful, historians Patrick Porter and Hal Brands note, nothing would be.